Hello, this is Sasha Adi, host of the PCOS Challenge radio show, designed to help women overcome polycystic ovarian syndrome, a hormonal and reproductive disorder that affects 1 in 10 women of childbearing age. We'll be bringing you the best information on fertility, hirsutism, weight loss, nutrition, mental health, and other conditions surrounding PCOS. The goal of the PCOS Challenge is to inspire and motivate you to make positive changes in your life. So tune in regularly to get insights from leading experts and the support you need. This is Sasha Adi. Help spread the word and take the PCOS Challenge. Hi, everyone. Thank you for listening to the PCOS Challenge radio show. This is Sasha Adi, your host of the PCOS Challenge radio show and also the PCOSChallenge.com support and networking site. Today, we have a registered dietitian, Monica Woolsey, and she's our PCOS expert, and she's a president and founder of After the Diet Network. She's a nutritionist and exercise physiologist with 25 years of experience in nutrition and exercise counseling. She received her bachelor's degree in nutrition from Cornell University, Ithaca, New York, and her master's degree in kinesiology from University of Colorado, Boulder. She's on for the second time, and that was by popular demand. Monica, welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me again, Sasha. It's nice to talk to you.
Oh, wonderful talking to you. So today we're just going to delve right into some of the hot topics that a lot of the women from the PCOSChallenge.com site, they had quite a few questions regarding nutrition and PCOS, so I'm sure you'll be able to help us out with that.
So this is Stump the Dietitian Day.
So one of the big things that many women, I'm sure you know this, many women with PCOS deal with is carb cravings, sugar cravings. So that's one big thing that I'd like to tackle here today. Would you like to give us your insight on how to curb sugar cravings?
Okay. Do you want me to just start talking, or do you have a specific question about it?
Just start talking, because I know most people, you know, they're trying to do the right thing, trying to eat the right things, but these cravings get in the way. Brownies, you know, cravings for all the bad things or the things that are not helpful for, especially for women with PCOS. So is there some way we can curb the cravings or is there a good substitute for the really bad, sugary, refined foods?
Absolutely. And this is a big frustration that I have with a lot of advice that I hear given to women with PCOS. It is almost so obvious that it's silly. When you, if you're going to take the time to take the afternoon off and go to the dietitian or the doctor, and then they're going to tell you not to eat carbs, you already know that. You wouldn't be going to that much trouble if you didn't know that. You're asking for help. And I don't think that a lot of people who aren't experiencing those cravings themselves can really relate to how horrible they can be. And it's actually, as I've worked more and more with polycystic ovary syndrome, that I don't have the syndrome, just so that everybody knows, but listening to women talk, I've realized that a lot of the reason that they're so skeptical about any advice that I might give them is that they have been given advice that's kind of silly and hasn't helped, and they're just wondering if I'm going to be yet another person that doesn't believe that these cravings are almost, you know, all-consuming. And, you know, I have moms call telling me, you know, that their daughters, they're finding candy wrappers under the pillow. That one woman that I was working with shared with me, and she was embarrassed to tell me this up front, that she would regularly bake a chocolate cake and put it on the counter on Sunday nights because she needed that for her binge food throughout the week. And so for those of you who are listening, it's really important, if you have things like this going on, that you let your dietitian know so he or she can help you. There's nothing wrong with that. It's part of the syndrome. It's not a character flaw. It really helps us to understand if we're doing our job correctly, if we can gauge if those cravings are gradually subsiding over time. There are physiological reasons for why you have the cravings, and there are very easy things that you can do to help tweak your biochemistry to get out of that rut. And to understand a couple of the reasons why, there are, many of you may have heard of neurotransmitters like serotonin and dopamine, and you might even be on an antidepressant that's helping to normalize the metabolism of those. There's another family of neurotransmitters called endocannabinoids. They've only been recently recognized, and the name may sound a little bit familiar because is it tetrahydrocannabinol, which is THC, it's the active ingredient in marijuana, is an external cannabinoid that you would take in if you smoked pot. Your body actually has a system of its own cannabinoids that provide a sense of well-being. And when they get out of balance, it's literally like you're walking around with the marijuana munchies, even if you've not smoked pot. And I think a lot of you out there can relate to that. And what's really interesting, if you've been to the NSYS blog or listened to me before, our program is very much about balancing omega-3 fatty acids versus omega-6 fatty acids. And when those get out of balance, endocannabinoids get out of balance as well. So if you work on balancing your fats, it can drastically decrease your cravings for carbohydrate. And so you'll hear a lot of advice about cutting out the carbs, cutting out the sugar. And my ultimate goal in working with someone is to have them not eat as much sugar and not eat as much simple sugar, but not because they're forcing themselves to not eat something that they're craving, more that they lose the appetite for it. They don't even want it anymore. And some of you may have even experienced that when you're eating well, if you walk into a food court in an airport or a shopping mall, for example, all of a sudden Cinnabon or McDonald's smells really horrible. You know, if you're out of balance and you're not doing well, it's like a vicious cycle in the opposite direction. That stuff smells really good. And it's very interesting how the body works in that way. You can have a positive vicious cycle or a positive vicious negative cycle or a negative vicious cycle. And it just depends on what you choose to do to help push it in the direction that you want it to go.
Oh, wow. So, yeah, so I'm sure most people would like to get to the point where Cinnabon or McDonald's smells awful to them.
Yeah, and I've experienced that myself. When I'm not eating well, I tend to want to have those kinds of foods. I'll start craving Fritos or a hamburger from a fast food joint. If I'm eating well, that stuff doesn't even sound good. And this woman that I shared with you, she's actually the first client who turned me on to the fact that these cravings were biochemically related. When she finally decided to tell me about the chocolate cake, it was after she'd been taking fish oil for a couple of weeks. And she said, "Does that stuff help with the cravings?" And I said, "Well, I don't know why." And she said that after about 2 weeks of being on the fish oil, she ended up throwing 2 cakes away because she kept forgetting they were on the counter.
I have to attest to that. I started taking fish oils recently, and my craving for carbs have dramatically decreased. So I had no idea. I had no idea that there was a relationship there. Wow.
I've been vindicated. My friends all tease me that I'm like the Windex guy in My Big Fat Greek Wedding, and I say, you know, fish oil's good for everything. But it really seems to be kind of the icing on the cake. And I think the reason that we get in trouble with it is that the way that our food supply is structured these days, the oils that break down the omega-3s are in oversupply in our diet. And it almost acts like a rusting out process on the brain and nervous system, and it rusts out it and makes it hard for the nervous system to do its job. And when the nervous system is stressed, its number one fuel is sugar. It starts burning through more sugar, and that's what those cravings are coming from. So if you can rebuild your nervous system and make sure that you have enough of the right types of fats to keep everything working and operating correctly, and you're taking out the fats that are breaking it down faster than your diet can rebuild it, you should notice exactly what you said. And that's actually how I can tell when someone is on the right track. When they can tell me that their carbohydrate cravings have decreased, I know that the diet's about where it needs to be.
I didn't know the correlation.
Well, now we'll just have to work on your Cinnabon thing.
Yeah, I'll schedule a session with you.
Well, you know, part of it is there is the absolute physiological piece that I'm explaining right now, but there's also the emotional piece, and it's very hard to tease that apart, and sometimes you can have all of your physiological piece in place, but if you've been consumed by something like PCOS, and it can actually take a lot of time if you think about it to participate in binge eating. And if all of a sudden that's taken away and you have 3 hours at night that you used to spend going to the bakery, going to the fast food restaurant, and you don't know how to fill up that time, you're going to eat just to eat.
Wow.
And I've heard some pretty significant stories of women. I had one client, for example, who would it was a fast food row, and she would start at 1, and she'd go to Jack in the Box, and she'd order a meal, and then she'd eat that, and then she'd go to McDonald's, and she'd order a meal, and she was embarrassed to get all of her food at one place, so she would spend, you know, all night going to 4 or 5 restaurants to get enough to feed the cravings.
Wow.
And so,
serious craving.
Yeah, and so if you can imagine when all of that, you take away the need for that, that's a lot of time that you need to fill.
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. And you can lose all of your leisure skills and maybe even just be uncomfortable with mm-hmm. peace and quiet if it hasn't been in your life for a long time.
And we touched on fish oils a little, and I do want to delve deeper into the different omega oils.
Okay.
Because I do think that's very important for listeners to know.
Yeah. One of the things that I'm noticing, we started doing fertility-friendly food tours in Whole Foods, and I find it very interesting that there seems to be a disproportionate percentage of women who are coming to those tours who are vegetarian, and they're not eating fish or any kind of seafood. And they are of the understanding that if you get the vegetarian types of omega-3, that's good enough. And just for those of you who aren't familiar with what those are, it's canola oil, flaxseed oil, nuts, pumpkin seeds are another, and then dark green leafy vegetables. And there is some conversion of the vegetarian type of omega-3 into the type that I'm talking about that makes the cravings go away, but it's not, generally not high enough to get the same response. And so I actually did a post a few weeks ago on the Insist blog on whether or not being vegetarian is hurting your fertility.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that you can't have a baby if you're vegetarian, but if you decide that you want to do it and be vegetarian, you really, really have to be careful about the types of fats that you get in your diet, because you've eliminated a major crucial nutrient in order to make that happen. Now, the thing that has come out in the last few years is it's a company called Martek, spelled M-A-R-T-E-K, and they've developed a type of algae that's very high in the very same type of omega-3 that is in fish. And they have been working with different food companies to get this into different types of foods. So you'll see it there's a brand of yogurt called Rachel's Wickedly Delicious Yogurt. I picked up some sushi, Fujisan sushi at Trader Joe's a few months ago without even looking, and realized when it came home it had the DHA in it. There's an energy bar called Belly Bar you may have heard of. And that is a lot like fish. And it's actually how fish get their omega-3s, is by eating the algae, and then it moves up the food chain. So you're getting the exact same thing. You're just getting it at a different point in the food chain. And that has opened up a lot of options for women who are vegetarians.
I do know. I've spoken with other experts. Some recommend fish oils over flaxseed oil, and some recommend flaxseed oil over fish oil to get your omega-3s.
Well, they're very different. They have very different functions. And one of the thing about the DHA, it's pretty non-negotiable. You have to have DHA in your diet. And it literally is the foundation of the nervous system. It is where all the receptors are lodged. And if you want, actually, I found a really cool picture for a presentation I'm doing this week that you can actually see where the DHA is and how the receptors are actually in that in that concrete. I'll post it on the blog after we talk so people can see it. And if you don't have that DHA, you don't have receptors. And there is research to show that when you have enough DHA in your system, receptor density for dopamine increases. And dopamine is what controls prolactin. And those of you who have been told you have trouble with prolactin, this is really important information. If you're having trouble with depression or anxiety, those are serotonin dopamine neurotransmitters. You can take all the antidepressant medication in the world, but if there are no receptors for those neurotransmitters and those chemicals to contact, it doesn't matter. They're not going to work the way that they were designed to. So the flax and the vegetarian sources, they are equally as important. And the way that I like to describe it is if your car was rusting out and you had a hole in your car and it needed to be fixed, you would fill that hole with a very specific material, which would be the DHA, and then the guy that fixed your car would probably put rust proofing over it to keep it from breaking down again. And that's what flax is. It's more like the rust proofing. It protects the DHA. And what we're finding in working with the women, especially those who have infertility issues, is if they take a little bit of both, the fish oil and the flaxseed oil together, they work together to give you the best bang for your buck. It's not an either or. It's really about both of them helping each other out. Yeah, yeah. And the other thing about flaxseed oil, and this makes it unique from the fish oil, is that it has a mild estrogen-like activity. And so it can help to jumpstart estrogen activity in women who are having trouble with that.
Okay, and then I heard that there are optimal storage temperatures in flaxseed oil.
You really don't want to keep it out at room temperature, especially if you live in a warm climate. Any type of an unsaturated fat is more likely to go rancid. So oftentimes, not all brands are stored in refrigerator cases, but if you might see a refrigerator case in the supplement section if you go into a store like Whole Foods or a health food store. And some brands do recommend that you store them. I actually, with fish oil, I store that in my freezer.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. That helps to take the burps away. If you find that you're burping fish oil, so it stays fresher longer at the lower temperature.
That's good to know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good
that
to
can
know.
Be a problem. I hear that complaint a lot.
Yeah.
I know I need to take it, but I hate the way I burp that fishy taste, and that's one thing that you can do.
I did have a question from someone from my site.
Okay.
This is Elspeth, and yeah, she was interested in eating the right thing as a vegetarian or vegan with PCOS, because she realized that some things do not work as well in her diet as others.
Well, the things that you want to be absolutely sure, it's very easy when you're vegetarian to go heavy on carbs, and so you want to know what your protein sources are that can help you. And I like to see, let me see what would be my favorite ones, beans and lentils. Another one that's very good is quinoa, and that's spelled Q-U-I-N-O-A. It's a high-protein grain. All of those that I just mentioned are high-protein grains. If you want to watch the amount of soy, especially if you have been told that either you have any kind of family history of an estrogen-based cancer or if you've been told that you have thyroid problems. Soy can be hard on your thyroid function, so it is okay in moderation, but you don't want to make it the primary protein source.
Are there different ways that you can eat soil that would be less quote-unquote harmful than others?
I think it's tempeh, and this is I'll have to double check, but I'm pretty sure tempeh is okay. It's this textured soy protein that is used in a lot of the energy bars and fillers and those kinds of things where it's processed, that it's not quite as good as when it's found. Something else that I tell people to have in moderation and not worry too much about is edamame.
Okay.
It's hard to eat too much edamame, but it's very easy if you're eating energy bars and, you know, meal replacement bars and shakes and so forth to get a whole lot of soy without realizing that you're getting it.
So let's go back to the carbs a bit.
Okay.
What about a low glycemic index. What does that mean?
A low glycemic index means how likely is a food going to raise your blood sugar, and how significant is that change going to be? So a food that is going to cause a drastic increase in your blood sugar is going to have a high glycemic index. Mm-hmm. And a food that is not likely to do that has a low glycemic index, or you might see just called high GI or low GI.
Mm-hmm.
And what you want to do is make sure that when you eat, that you are not forcing rapid changes in your glucose. Because the wider the swings, your body tends to produce enough insulin for the worst case scenario that's registered on your meter based on your history. So if you're someone who's doing a lot of binging and then dieting and then binging and then dieting, you tend to have higher insulin levels than if you're eating smaller meals more frequently. Because the body has to be ready for that worst-case scenario at any given time. And so the foods that the carbohydrates that tend to have the lowest glycemic index are beans, lentils, all the ones I just mentioned, split peas. I'm not quite sure where quinoa falls on that, but I think it's reasonably low. The other thing is that when you eat foods that are traditionally thought of as high glycemic index foods, make sure that you eat them in the presence of a protein. And that can be actually help with binging. If you know that you're a candy bar person, for example, or if you know that you're a cookie person, but your rule is I can only eat this if I'm eating it with a meal as a dessert in a controlled portion, you're much likely to eat less of it. It's not that a cookie is bad. It's the way many people eat cookies that it gets them into trouble. You know, at 3 o'clock in the afternoon when their energy is crashing and they use that sugar to boost their energy up, or they use it to deal with stress. If you're eating something and you're eating it mindfully and eating it as part of a planned meal, you're most likely to eat a lot less of it when you do it that way.
So what is your take on fasting? Is that ever good for especially for women with PCOS?
I'm just not a big fan of messing with energy supply. I really think that the human body is a lot like a car. And, you know, a car runs best when it has a regular fuel supply coming in at regular intervals. And you would never deprive your car of gasoline and expect it to run. You know, you would always make sure that there's fuel in the tank. And a lot of fasting, another reason I don't like it is because it's done for self-punitive reasons. I've been bad, so I have to skip a meal.
Mm-hmm.
Or the other option would be, well, I know I'm going to go out tonight and I want to save my calories, so I'm going to skip breakfast. And then you set yourself up to binge because you're so hungry by the time that meal comes, you know, that you don't have much control over it. I'm not a big fan of there are different ways that you can detox or clean your system out that don't involve something that kind of has a punitive energy surrounding it, and that I would rather see people do.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, another thing that people may do are those extra high-protein diets. What do you think of those?
You have to be careful with them. I know Atkins was very popular, and I've actually been a dietitian long enough to have gone through the second round of Atkins. and the basic concept around Atkins probably is not all that bad, but you have to be careful about the type of proteins that you're using. The proteins that are the best and the most beneficial are, again, the more of the vegetarian proteins, the seafood proteins, and moderate amounts of chicken and turkey. If you're using a high-protein diet as an excuse to eat a lot of burgers and bacon and steak and all that, that's probably not going to help you, because those types of proteins are also very high in saturated fat, which can, again, throw your balance of omega-6s and 3s off.
Okay.
So you want to make sure that the proteins that you're eating are helping to promote good omega-3, 6 balance.
So it's all about balance. You know, there shouldn't be too much or too little of anything. You know, I think if that's a rule, if there's a rule, that should be it.
Well, yeah, and actually something that I say a lot is that PCOS is a very counterintuitive syndrome. If you are exercising and you're not losing weight, your inclination is, well, then I need to exercise longer and turn up the intensity on the machine, and the answer may be to back off and moderate a little bit more. If you're dieting too intensely, the answer may be being a little kinder to yourself and letting up and approaching it from that respect.
Yeah, and so that leads me to the next topic, which I find is probably one of the greatest saboteurs of healthy living is stress. And if you are out of balance and have a higher level of stress, that can affect your nutritional habits as well, no?
Absolutely, and it relates completely to the sugar cravings. The other reason that we oftentimes feel cravings for sugar is that there's a threshold with the neurons, which are the brain cells that communicate information, and you have to have a certain level of input in order to stimulate a neuron to react. And what's interesting about PCOS is that the diet that works real well for PCOS is also the diet that has been found to work real well for epilepsy. And if you can, and epilepsy is when brain cells just kind of freak out and they start spitting out all kinds of information and it's not really doing anything productive. And so there is some thought that what may be happening with PCOS, and again, it's that omega-6 to 3 ratio, is that getting omega-3s back in the diet it makes it harder for you to feel stressed. And so if you're not feeling stressed, you're less likely to be craving sugar. One of the things that I always tell women is, because when you start to crave them, you can take it personally and you can freak out because you know what path you're likely to go down, and it's a downward spiral. But if you stop being judgmental and start to recognize and almost step outside of yourself and look and say, okay, when I feel this way, I know that my body is stressed. And start to ask yourself, what could be the cause of it? Did I sleep well last night? Did I have a stressful day? Have I been dieting too much? Have I not exercised? What is it that's out of balance in my life? These cravings are telling me that I'm out of balance. Even though it feels like the immediate answer might be nutritional, the long-term answer might be to take in a little more yoga, or if there's a conflict that needs to be addressed, to address that, work on getting to bed a little bit earlier, whatever it is. But those cravings are almost always telling you that something that has happened in the last couple of days that has started to throw you out of balance.
There goes the operative word again, balance.
I dang it.
Okay, and this is one thing that I think a lot of people do not pay that much attention to, liquid calories.
Oh,
you know, yesterday, a lot of times people go out, you know, have their margaritas and don't really pay attention to the amount of calories that they may be taking in. If you could give us a way to balance that sort of behavior, that would be great.
Yeah, you know, to have an occasional glass of wine can be a wonderful thing. And, you know, if that's not your one thing that you do to manage stress, then you're probably okay to do that once in a while. But a lot of those mixed drinks also have mixers in them that contain a lot of sugar. So when you're drinking a margarita, you're also drinking triple sec, which is sweet syrup. If you're having a vodka tonic, you know, the vodka itself has calories, the tonic water itself has calories. You're almost always better off with a simple beer or a glass of red wine if you can do it. And again, to have it with a meal and not have it with happy hour where there's all kinds of nibblies out that you're likely to eat, that's my rule for myself. And actually, a glass of red wine has some pretty decent antioxidants in it, so it's not a bad thing to have it. It's how you choose to use it that determines whether it's going to be helpful or hurtful.
Yeah, but, you know, it's so difficult, you know, going to happy hour or even if it's not alcoholic, you know, going to a party or gathering with your friends, and, you know, you partake in, even if it's not alcoholic beverage, there are little snacks lying around.
Yeah, something that you can do, you can always bring your own. One of the lowest glycemic food that I have seen on the charts that's the great party food is hummus, and you can bring that with a little vegetable tray if you want, and that you get credit for being a gracious guest, bringing a food that most people like, and then there's something that you know that you can eat there. Making sure that there's some kind of non-alcoholic beverage that you can consume. A part of it is just making decisions for yourself that it's not always easy to make but are important to make. And really, because most of the women I work with who have PCOS are highly intelligent, high achieving, very creative women, I always tell them there's nothing wrong with you. It's just the opposite. Your brain actually is a very high functioning brain. It's almost like a Ferrari brain. You know, and if you have a Ferrari, you take care of it very differently than you'd take care of a Yugo. And, you know, you'd make sure that it got its tune-ups every 3,000 miles. You'd be constantly checking the oil, changing the tires because you didn't want to break down. If you have a Yugo and you know it's a junker, you don't really put that much time or money into it. So if you start thinking of yourself rather than there's something wrong with you that needs to be fixed, and no, I have a very cool brain. I'm capable of doing a lot of things, and if I want it to function at its very best, I have to take the time to make sure that it's getting the right fuel and it's getting the right tune-ups and it's getting enough sleep, you know, and so forth. So
okay. So yeah, so our message for the day is balance with everything you do.
There's balance, and that there's nothing wrong with you. There's a whole lot of great stuff, but you have to choose to see it that way.
Absolutely, and it can be disheartening for many if they feel like, oh, what's wrong with me? You know, why am I behaving like this? You know, this is self-destructive. Why can't I stop? It does take a little bit more for you to actively pause and realize that you can change these things. And, you know, there's a reason you're behaving this way. And I feel like if people understand the root of the problem, then it's easier for us to tackle it.
Yeah, and the thing is that if you focus on the behavioral piece, you can really get yourself in trouble. I got into PCOS kind of through the back door. I worked in eating disorders first, and I am convinced that a lot of women who have PCOS have been misdiagnosed with an eating disorder. And so they can spend thousands of dollars and years of time trying to get psychological help for a physiological condition. And it's almost like trying, you know, you have cancer and you put a cast on your leg. You're not giving yourself the right solution to the problem that you've identified. So a big part of what I'm doing now is trying to reach out to eating disorder professionals and getting them to understand if someone comes in and they have these emotional symptoms, but they also have these physical symptoms, before you put them in an eating disorder treatment plan, check their glucose tolerance test, check their hormones, and make sure you're dealing with the right problem first.
Right.
And that you
absolutely
can save yourself a lot of grief and a lot of shame and you know, what's wrong with me? You know, there's nothing wrong with you if you went and got help and you got the wrong kind of help.
Yeah, exactly. I think women with PCOS are either, you know, underdiagnosed or misdiagnosed lots of times. So it's helpful if we're able to actually figure out what's going on so that we can start with the, you know, the proper behaviors to counteract the effects of PCOS.
Yeah, and, you know, I've had conversations, and we're getting a little off topic here, but there are many wonderful physicians who treat PCOS, and they're very, very good at what they do. But I have had conversations with some physicians who really don't like the syndrome. And I think the way that they're under pressure sometimes to get a lot of people in and out of their office, it's a lot easier to work with someone who has a runny nose and write a script for an antibiotic than it is to sit down and talk to someone with a complicated disorder. And so you may not get as much time from a physician who's a little bit intimidated or has that kind of a personality, and it really is worth your time. You're doing this physician a favor because you're not forcing something that they don't want to do on them, and you're getting the help that you need from somebody who does want to help you and who does understand the syndrome. So it really is worth it to do your research, take the time, and find someone who can help you in a way that you need to be helped.
Yeah, and those are great points. Monica, would you be able to just tell us a little bit about what you're doing and if you have any success stories that you want to share?
I have a great one. This has actually been a case I've been working on for about a year, and I am trying to really approach my work with humility, and I really believe that this is very challenging work, and I'm honored by anyone who asks me for help. It's not anything that I'm trying to go out and be any kind of a guru. And so this one couple called me, and it was a very complicated case where I honestly thought when I left meeting with them that I wasn't going to be able to help them. And I said a prayer asking that if it was meant for me to be able to help this couple, that I wanted to be able to, but I wanted to be able to recognize my limits. And it was a young woman who had a miscarriage and was really struggling with a lot of mood swings and frustration and just really, really having a hard time getting over the miscarriage. And she really wanted a baby, but as many of you might be able to relate, she was so afraid to become pregnant again because she didn't want to go through what she'd just been through. She felt like a failure as a woman. So she also had pretty severe symptoms of PCOS. She had bulimia. And she had learned to grow, to style her hair in a way that she could completely cover a bald patch on one side of her head.
Wow.
Where the hair had just fallen out in clumps. And so we just focused on some basic things. And what really struck me and what she has taught me, and I have to thank her for that, is that sometimes when nobody's giving you the help that you want, you can become completely afraid of food and afraid to eat anything because you're so afraid that any little thing that you eat is going to mess up your hormones, give you a miscarriage, you know, all of the things that you're afraid of. And so we just took baby steps, and we talked about different foods that she might like. And we had a little bit of a meal plan, but it was more about identifying what foods that she really liked that she was afraid of, that she thought she couldn't eat, and reintroducing those. And so we worked on that for about 6 months and walked into her house for a session, and she actually had all these fruits out on the counter that she wanted me to try. So I knew we were getting somewhere when she had fruit because she had been afraid of that when we first started meeting. And then I actually had referred her to a naturopathic physician in town who specializes in infertility, and within a couple of weeks of going to see her, she became pregnant. So what's been and I hadn't seen her for few months, and she's about 7 months pregnant now, and she is doing fabulously. She just had a glucose tolerance test done, and it's on the low end of normal. She has gained minimal weight. I can tell that she's losing body fat, but the sonograms are showing that the baby's growing just fine. It's just an incredible story. Her hair is starting to grow back, her skin's starting to clear up, and she just, I don't think she ever thought that who she is today was where she would be when we started working a year ago. And it's just, I'm keeping my fingers crossed because we still have 2 months to go, but, it's just all of the things that it took in order for someone to, you know, first of all, trust two different health professionals when everyone else had failed her. That was my learning experience in this case study. Was, you know, I have to understand that if someone doesn't trust me when they first start working with me, that it's their right, you know, and I will do my best to earn their trust. And that may be it may be a month-long process or a year-long process. But, you know, if it's meant to be, you know, then things will happen. And I told her, you know, not to give the doctor or me too much credit for what she's achieved, because the doctor would not have been able to have been as successful as quickly with her if she had not been willing to make all of the changes that she had made with her diet. She was really the one who orchestrated the success, and we just kind of added a couple of tweaks in there. So she is 90% responsible for her success. It wasn't me, and it wasn't the physician who did that.
Wow, but that's great, you know, but I do feel that your guidance probably gave her the confidence to move forward. So
But I couldn't eat the food for her. I couldn't bring it home from the grocery store. You know, it had to be her that decided that she was going to try things. And we had several phone calls, and she really wanted to eat something, and she was afraid. Someone told her, oh, you can't eat that when you're pregnant, you know, but she was really hungry for it. And the other thing, it was really cute, she has started to crave eggs, and she wanted to know if that was okay. And and egg whites are the most perfect protein that you can crave. And she's eating omega-3 eggs, so there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. So I'm thinking that maybe all the eggs that she's eating are probably one reason why she's as successful as she is. But to even envision that eggs would be a food that she would crave when it was all the candy and sweets 8 months ago that she was craving.
Yeah.
That's what's really nice for me to see.
Oh, that's wonderful. I love hearing success stories. And she's in our thoughts because, you know, she does have 2 more months to go, but I do hope that she has a successful pregnancy and delivery.
Yeah, Absolutely.
And
for
life.
Any of you who believe in prayer, this woman could really use it right now. So she's very excited and very happy and showed me all of her sonograms. But I still believe that that we still have 2 months to go, and I want it to be a great story for her. So.
Absolutely. Well, thank you. And about your blog, I'm still following your blog. You tell our listeners about your blog because, you know, I do enjoy reading. They're quite insightful, and I have gone grocery shopping based on what you put in your blog. So.
Well, now the pressure's on, you know, because some days I have no idea what I'm going to put on there. But it's a blog that is put together by the dietitians who have gone through the training. And actually, there's one therapist on there as well. And I've encouraged each of them to be equally as diligent at writing as myself, because I think we all have different ways of explaining things, and we can connect with different people. But one of the features on there is a food of the week. And I really try and make that fun, because dietitians sometimes I think are intimidating to people who aren't confident with food, and you have this perception that we eat perfectly and we make these menus out, and it's so not true. You know, I don't know if you read the one about the muffins last week, but you know, I kind of bake muffins and I forgot half the stuff at the grocery store, and you know, I still turned out with a good muffin, and I just try and think of things that might be in season or that you might not have thought of, or if I see a new food in the store that could be helpful. And then once a week I try and do something that's more research-based. So on another discussion group, someone had asked about whether or not Vitex was a good supplement to take, and I'm working on a series that works up to answering it, but taking one hormone at a time and explaining, you know, what normal is and what the influences are on that hormone. And then there's one I have scheduled to post as soon as your program is over this afternoon on the eggplant water that you had asked me about.
So
Sasha sometimes sends me questions about things that are being asked, and that keeps me up. I like to know what kinds of questions women have, what information they're reading, so that I am current and pertinent to what women need as far as taking care of themselves.
Yeah, so can you tell us a little bit about what you think about eggplant water?
Well, your email was really funny because I could tell you, like, okay, this sounds kind of good, but, you know, am I being yanked around here?
Yeah.
And what it was, and I linked to the article so people could read it if they want. It's in the blog post. There was a Q&A in the health section of the Los Angeles Times a couple weeks ago where someone had claimed that when they put slices of eggplant in water and let it sit, that when they drank that water, they lost weight and their blood pressure went down, which sounds kind of funky. But I'm kind of one of those people where, if there's nothing that says this is going to hurt and it might help, why not try it and consider it? Mm-hmm. And the other thing that I like to do is just go into the literature and see if I can find any research. And there was one abstract that showed that suggested that an eggplant-based diet is a diet that can help with blood pressure, and there's a compound in eggplant that's very similar to some blood pressure medications that people are prescribed. So, you know, if eggplant, when it's uncooked, is fairly tasteless, and I can't see where, if you have a nice glass pitcher at home, since it's getting warm and you're probably drinking more water anyway, it wouldn't hurt to, you know, and it occurred to me that you could probably even, because it's such a bland fruit, if you're making smoothies, you could probably chop a little bit of eggplant in and put it in a smoothie and not even notice that it's there. In the post that I put up a recipe for ratatouille, because that's an eggplant-based stew, and that's fairly popular. But it seemed like there might be a little bit of credence to it. Everybody's going to have a different experience with it, and I would not, this is the thing I have to make clear, if you're on blood pressure medication, do not stop taking it because you heard me say this.
Yeah.
That would be a very dangerous thing to do. But what you could do is you could try the eggplant water, and then if you have an appointment with your physician, go in and have your blood pressure checked and see if you still need the medication to be at the level that it is. And it may be possible that as you're becoming more regular with the eggplant water that you could gradually taper off of the medication.
I think this is worth looking into. Anything is worth looking into. This sounds pretty healthy to me, you know, because eggplant, like you said, it has certain ingredients. I did try to do some research myself. It has certain ingredients that can help with your blood pressure, but what I'm not sure is if you do not have hypertension, if there should be a limit to
I don't know. I don't think that it would hurt people, because I know it doesn't hurt people, as far as I know, if you have regular blood pressure to take mm-hmm. sodium out. It's not going to cause you to have low blood pressure. That's an entirely mm-hmm. different mechanism. So, and you absolutely, you're not going to just be able to drink eggplant water without watching what you eat.
Right,
you're
right.
You're not going to magically lose weight because you're drinking eggplant water, but you certainly are going to have some changes in your biochemistry that might make it easier for the things that you're doing with your diet to kick in. There's another vegetable, actually, that's good for blood pressure, too, and that's beets.
Yeah.
Beets have nitrites in them, and that's another one that you can throw into a smoothie and not know that it's there. I didn't realize that I liked beets until I was, you know, an adult, just a few years ago. And they're kind of sweet. They're on a lot of salad bars. If you shop at Whole Foods, they have a great ginger beet salad that they sell. Trader Joe's has cooked beets in their refrigerator case. I really like them. And there was a study done where they gave a small amount of beet juice to a group of people, and within a half hour, their blood pressure dropped.
Yeah.
So
and these
yeah,
things do sound like miracle drugs, but they're fruits that we have access to every day. So.
They're right there, and that's what I, when I do the Whole Foods classes, and we always go in and I always pick up the beets and I tell them it doesn't have to be goji berries hand-picked by, monks up in the, Chinese mountains. These beets are a locally produced crop here in Arizona. It's a local gem. And the more different types of foods that you eat and the more that you eat them in season when they're higher in antioxidants, the more power you'll get from them. So it's an argument for not being afraid of food, and especially not fruits and vegetables, because they have a whole lot more to them than carbohydrates.
Great. So, Monica, can you tell our audience how to reach you and your blog so they can get all this wonderful information that I'm getting?
Absolutely. The blog is www.incyst, which is spelled incyst.blogspot.com. And I also, incyst is my Twitter name, and whenever I update any of my blogs, I always tweet it, so you can follow me on Twitter. I also have an email address, which is monika@afterthediet.com.
Yes, and I encourage everyone to follow Monica and the rest of the INSYST team on the INSYST blog, because there's lots of great information to be had there.
Yeah, and quite honestly, every dietitian on that you see listed on the blog on the side can do exactly what I'm doing. It's not
mm-hmm.
I'm kind of the front person because I started it, but if you are living in especially Southern California, that's where most of them are right now. There's a team that just got up and running in the Minneapolis area. There's a dietitian on that team that just moved to San Jose, so we're getting started in Northern California, Virginia. Austin, Texas will be up and running next week. So just take a look. And if you don't see anything locally, then we do online. We can counsel you through the internet.
Oh, that's great. Well, Monica, thank you for being on the PCOS Challenge Radio Show. I'll be speaking to a few other INSYST of your INSYST teammates in upcoming shows. So
I can't wait. They're really excited to do that, and it gives you a chance to hear some of the other people who are doing great things out there.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, thank you very much, Monica, and I'd love to have you back on the show again.
Anytime.
Okay, well, thank you, and I'll talk to you again.
Okay, take care.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the PCOS Challenge Radio Show. Tune in regularly to get insights from leading experts and the support you need. Also, be sure to join our social network at PCOSChallenge.com and sign up for our newsletter. This is Sasha Ati. Help spread the word and take the PCOS Challenge.